So I just, oh God, I'm dribbling on myself again. I just found out that quote about we can, which Mr. H and others wanted, we can ill afford to idle in a retrogressive groove. You really want to see that quote because it goes on to say, if we do, we're dead. You know, it's like no half measures about that. You have to keep going forward. Well, that quote, if you'll just email me, I'll send it to you because I just realized I put it in my new newsletter. And by the way, for all of the promotion Nazis out there, I am fully retired. I am not hustling any business from anybody, anywhere. All I do is travel and play. So when I give you this information about me, it's not to promote. I never was into that, but whatever. So just know that I just want to share with you some wealth of what I've been learning on the journey. Okay? Okay. So I was going to tell you something else. Oh, yeah. For later, I have little presents up here who forever wants them. So let's just talk a little bit about how it was at lunch, what happened, and whatever you want to share. How many are new that weren't here this morning? You guys are out of it. I mean, totally. No, because we've come a long way since 9 a.m. And so, but you'll get what you get and get the tapes or whatever. But like that. Yeah, Margie.
One thing that I noticed was that we were sitting in a restaurant, and we started talking about food from another restaurant. And we went, whoops, wow, oh, look.
Great.
And we stopped.
Yes.
So that was great.
Yes. And you know how I told you that people in treatment used to hate going through those kind of mindful eating things? But they were just training exercises so that you become conscious of when you're doing it and when you're not. It doesn't mean you never do it. Doesn't mean I don't still talk with my mouth full sometimes. I still do that. But at least I'm alive and aware and I know what I'm doing. And that's what we want to get out of recovery. Doesn't mean we get perfection. And, you know, a lot of my same mistakes and my same personality stuff, I'm still working on the same stuff. My sponsor always says, there's your low self-esteem. Shut up! How can I have low self-esteem? I'm so fabulous, you know. There it is. Look at how you're doing, how you're behaving. Yeah, yeah. And there it is. So we catch it sooner and turn it around. It doesn't mean we ever get rid of these things. And we have to stop going at it like with a machete and instead incorporate and accept it. Some of my defects, one, helped me survive a lot of trauma, and two, have actually turned into assets in some ways. My first sponsor used to say, any asset taken to extreme becomes a liability. And liabilities taken to extreme could become assets. So yes, sir.
I was at lunch with a big lunch group, and I'm sitting there very nice with all the people I didn't know, and I was typically, because I was a school teacher, and I was controlling everything, talking to all, you know, forever, I started to get into that mood of, you know, doing my thing, impress them, and so on, and then I thought about what you said, because that would lead to then talking with my mouth open and full with food and obnoxious behavior and getting a sore throat and then feeling depressed and then probably not even coming back, you know. But I thought of what you said and I calmed down and I focused a little bit more on my food and I stopped talking so much. And then the person next to me felt freer to talk, and she gave me a story that was just incredible about her life that I would have never had a chance to ever hear if I keep my mouth rattling.
Right.
And she gave me a real gift of an incredible story in her family, and I was really touched by that, and I kind of made a new friend because I kept my mouth shut.
Right, and you'll tend to learn more, but when you're talking, you only learn what you already know. That's very interesting. And then that other thing about being independent of the goodwill of others. Huh? So if we come to OA to impress the folks, you want to be the queen of OA? There are better clubs. You know? Really. I mean, what does that get you? Right? So, and many of you know this, I always kept a very low profile in OA because I just wanted to come here to lose my ass. You know? I did not, and I was a big show-off out in the world in my career, but in OA, and especially you people at the LA Intergroup, I used to drive up here from San Pedro and sit quietly in the back of the room. I never let people know what I did or how smart I was. Actually, I did let my first sponsor know in case she would be intimidated. I said, I just want you to know that I'm a therapist and, you know, in case that's a problem. She said, honey, to me, you're just a sick, suffering woman. Thank you, Jesus, huh? And then another time I said to her how smart I was, and I said, you know, I really got something here. I think I'm actually afraid to get thin. I have an insight. I'm afraid to get thin. She said, well, why don't you get thin, and then we'll talk about it. Huh? Cool, huh? Man, have I been lucky, really, to have people who will deal with me honestly. I deal with people honestly, too. And some people say I am mean. I'm not, it's nothing personal. I'm fighting a serious illness here. Get over it. Get your ego out of the way. You know, I have never seen, you know, I've worked in hospitals for almost half a century. I see a doctor go in and tell a guy he's going to cut off his leg, and he gets less resistance than when I say, I think it'd be a good idea if you go to OA 3 times a week. What? I can't do that, and I don't need that. All right. So, it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. So, let's hear some more of your experience at the trough. Kelly. And the great thing is because we want to control and savor our food and enjoy our eating. That's why we do it. And it's also kind of classy. It's really much more polite to not be spitting at people. Who knew, you know? What?
They appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so humane. But see, what we give up is, I think what Leonard was referring to, is that we give up impressing the folks. We kind of believe that we can just be. Just a human being, not a human doing. We can sit with others, and that can be enough. You know, at major crises for people, and in therapy as well, when I've been the therapist, the most important things I've ever done is sit quietly. I'm telling you, with all the brilliant insights I ever delivered, most important work I ever did was to be another breathing human with a person. And guess what? That was enough. That was just what they needed. See? What does my brain know? Huh? What does Miss Smarty Pants know? My sponsor just sent me back an email. I've been spending a year composing an email to some people who really hurt me last year. If you go on what is it called? Not Serenity Sunday, the other one. The workshop. Last year in October, I spoke at that workshop, and it's free on the internet. And I was LA Intergroup. And I was talking about what had happened to me from this group of therapists in New York and how traumatizing it was to me. And I'm still not over it. I'm still in it, but much further along. And so finally, last week, after about 25 of these emails that my sponsor edited, she finally approved this one, and I sent it. And now the people are responding to me, calling and writing, and we're kind of trying to heal around what happened. And in fact, there's one in my inbox right now, but I said I am not going to open it in the middle of this because I don't need any more distractions and other energy. But anyway, there's a reason I'm telling you this. It'll come to me before the end. What were we talking about?
Doing important work in silence.
No, it was after that. Anyway, did I have a good time? Did I keep my clothes on? I'll remember before the day's over.
What was the group that workshop that you went to, and a lot of people gave you bad feedback? That's what I got out of it.
Out of this, what I just said about these ladies?
You're starting to email these people back. So.
A part of what I wanted to say about that, I don't know how it relates, but no matter what, we all have to take responsibility for what we create, you know? So in this particular situation with these ladies, I was definitely victimized. I was the victim, okay? So now it comes out that one of them, who I believe instigated the entire thing, they did kind of a mean girls thing to me. And, of course, I was always teased as a kid. Fatty, fatty, 2x4, can't get through the bathroom door, so she did it on the floor, licked it up, and did some more. That's what they sang to me. And so I have a lot of sensitivity around being objectified and dehumanized and, being a freak and all those things. And these ladies knew that. And they did it anyway. So that's their karma. That's their stuff. But one of them finally now is saying that she's been holding on to a resentment at me from something I said to her 20 years ago. Now, here's the deal. I knew there was something totally crazy about what they did and how they did it. It didn't matter how reasonable. It was like, outrageous. Now, when you're in recovery, the hairs will stand up on your end. Hairs on your arm will stand up when you're in the presence of dishonesty. You will know. And you won't necessarily understand why you're having such a reaction. Now, we do say in OA, if it's hysterical, it's historical. So you got to cycle back and investigate, is this childhood trauma? Am I overreacting or blah, blah, blah? So I wrote back to her because she never dealt with what she experienced 20 years ago. See, what it was about is that I confronted her about using drugs. She was mad at me. She never confronted me with her anger. So 20 years later, she feels very reasonable without a clue to kill me. So it's about recognizing our humanity, all of us. Can I be a mean girl? Even if I'm gossiping, I have been working so hard on my gossiping. This is from childhood stuff at the kitchen table with my mother with the seeded rolls and the butter. Talking about everybody. And it is so negative to do that violence, but it's tantalizing, So whenever like you did at lunch, noticing, I get it with gossip. I'll start up, did you hear? And then I catch myself. I don't want to go there. I don't want to be that person. Because what goes around comes around, Then I'm going to be the next one on their list talking about me. And I don't like it. So do unto others, that whole deal, So P.S., what I'm trying to say here is, Okay, responsibility. No free lunch. I don't get away with how I confronted that woman about her drugs. It was 20 years ago, and I was a hotshot addiction counselor, and I thought I knew everything. And I wasn't sensitive to how it came to her. I was a bit mean-spirited myself. Not a bit. I was mean-spirited in how I confronted her. So if I can see my part in it, I try to forgive both of us. Okay? Of course, I think her timing sucks, you know. Why didn't you tell me then, I could say. But, you know, we all have different styles, and we all have different degrees of courage. That's what I want to talk about, courage. Don't let me forget. So what I wrote to her was something a monk once told me, a Buddhist monk. He said, if the lion knew that the zebra was pregnant, he'd starve to death. What does that mean? What?
No idea.
Okay, great. That's a good place.
I think it means that his compassion then would supersede his hunger.
Exactly. Exactly. His compassion would supersede his hunger. However, he is a beast in the wild, and he is in a life and death struggle. He's got to eat. With us humans, usually it's not survival we're dealing with, but it's the same sort of thing. When we forget that the other guy has humanity, when we know the other guy has humanity, we can't kill. I mean, I'm even starting to eat less meat. And I argued with monks about this for 25 years now. So, anyway. So courage. Okay, here's the deal. So then one of the ladies I talked to about this whole thing, she said, but you always seem so strong. Who would know that you would have been so hurt by it? One, just like this morning we started learning our song, I expect you to know my song. If you know me and I have intimately shared with you, I'm sorry, I do put too much expectations on people. But I expect you to keep reminding me of my song. Sorry, new people, this is something we dealt with this morning. We'll get back to it by the end of the day today, and you'll get to do it again. So what hurt was that the person didn't know how it would hurt. But also I said to her, the reason that I appear so courageous and so strong is because of all the support systems I have created for myself. My sponsor, my groups, my meditation groups, my therapy groups. I'm not strong. I'm just bolstered up. So someone came to me at the break at lunch, and I'm so grateful. She said, I admire your courage in what you were putting out this morning. And I thank her, because in the face of fear, you do it anyway. But it's a responsibility that I owe to all the people who are still bolstering me up. So what I told the lady is, you were one of my support systems. So that's why. I'm going to sleep now. Oh, thank you. So, any more about anything that came during lunch? Yes.
I noticed two things. One is...
Wait. Let me just come over here so that you can be on the tape better. Go ahead.
I noticed two things. One was that before I was done with a bite in my mouth, I was trying to wash it down. So I don't know why I was in such a hurry, but it was very hard to put the fork down. And the other was I found I appreciated the permission to be quiet.
Yeah. Yes. That's a nice one. I have something on my refrigerator that relates to that. Let's see. Well, I'll remember it later, or email me and I'll tell you it. But, I rarely have anything to drink during my meals. I drink before and I drink after, but during the meal, I want to suck it dry, baby. Hey, this is my dinner, and I want every single bit of it. I'm not washing down nothing. Okay? It's all about because I like to eat. Okay? So if you really like food, if that's why you're here at Overeaters Anonymous, if you forgot, we do like to eat. So let yourself eat. Let yourself enjoy the hell out of it. No restriction. Well, you know what I mean. Yeah.
One thing about it when I eat at the table.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Bert. One thing that I notice at the table, it's not necessarily that I want to talk, it's that I want to interact. I come from a culture where food is a relaxant. We relax around the table. We go and we start talking, and in between bites we're thinking. But you know what? The thing is that I am interacting with my loved ones, and we're talking, and we're, how have you been? Oh, I hear you have this problem. What is it? And you want to try to absorb. It's not only eating physically. Now there's a spiritual interaction when it comes to food and drinking, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, this is what separates the men from the boys here. And this is, like I was talking earlier, this is some of the lifestyle changes we have to make. 'Cause the rest of the folks out there can do more eating and talking. We need to separate those two. You know, when I had treatment centers, whenever they were in a session with the nutritionist, they wanted to talk about their feelings. And when I was with the therapist, they wanted to talk about their food. I said, whoa, boundaries. I go to a nutritionist or a food sponsor, and I talk about my food. Then I disconnect food from feelings. Then I go over here to my counselor and talk about my feelings without mentioning my food. Our problem is that we have too closely connected those. And for a while, we need to separate them. And then later, you might have the freedom of choice, like the person said about, you know, chewing and then opening their mouth to talk. But this is training. You put yourself through training to separate these things out. Otherwise, you're a newcomer. That's what we do. We come in talking and eating and feeling, and boundaries are all messed up. I'm not saying that as critical. That's what we've trained. That's what we know. That's what the world out there is doing. Of course, it's lovely. Lovely. But for a while, we have to be weirdos. We have to be weirdos. Okay? Now, I found in recovery that whenever I went to a party, I stood around the buffet table. Okay? I was not really that interested in interacting with you or you. I would say a few words to you, but my mind was blah, 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 blah. Okay? So I had to work to just separate. If I go to a party, if I'm going to take something, I take it and I sit down. I cannot stand around this table. Because I go to unconscious automatic pilot. For a while, what I was saying this morning is maybe not for your whole life every single day, one day at a time, 24/7. Sometimes you'll relax that. But you need to train yourself to have discipline and boundaries. That's what we're doing here, I'm sorry to say. Or, as some people say, God will do it for me. I say God is not your butler. Okay? God doesn't come around cleaning up your messes. You got to invest that $5 and he'll match your donation. So, what was I going to say around that? Buffet table. To separate out socializing from eating. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I noticed that you bring up a good point about the noshing, okay? The thing is that we, there has been discussions that I learned from Overeaters Anonymous that there's three types. There's the binger, there's the nosher, and then there's the grazer. And the thing is that when you were taught, when you were explaining yourself, the grazer, you're not listening to anybody.
You're not getting, you're at the buffet because they laid out the snack bar, yeah. The potato chips, the thing, all that. And then all you're doing is, and you know, you talk, you know, one of the hints that we try to learn is to take that food and go to another end of it. But you know, the thing is that that's part of the, when you, I want to want your point of view about the socializing at the parties, because that's another, that I'm letting her, you know, call your sponsor, let them know what you're doing, where you're at, and how long you're going to be there. What you, I'm there to socialize, I'm there to talk, I'm only there for 2 hours, get the hell out.
Right.
You know, these are the boundaries that we probably set ourselves, but you know what, let me tell you, you're having a good time, you know, and the next thing you know, you're at the buffet.
Right. Well, see, if we're fully consciously having that good time, we may get filled enough by the conversation that we don't have to go to the buffet. Quite frankly, a lot of people are boring, you know. So, you know, standing around making a small talk, saying the same thing over and over to thousands of people is not my idea of a good time. And I'd much rather slurp up some food. So, yeah, like you said, get the hell out of there, you know? What are you doing there? Slippery slope, slippery places, right? So...
Well, you were invited.
What?
You were invited.
I'm invited a lot, so... You're invited? Yeah, people can invite you to all kinds of things, but we have choice in recovery, you know? But what you were describing was that bookending thing, you know? Talk to someone before you go, promise you'll talk to them after about how it went... And so you have someone else at the party with you. You bring your team. They're in your consciousness. For example, actually, I was supposed to be here today with Beverly, my friend from Phoenix, and she got sick, so she's not here. So she said, call me, you know, when it's over, you know, how it goes. And I said, okay. And I was thinking, coming down on the elevator, God, I'm going to call Bev and tell her it went great. Really had a great day. And then I thought, Jude, you don't know what's going to happen this afternoon, you know. But I said, but I'm going to keep into my consciousness that my, you know, what I envision is that I'm going to call her and say it was a great day. So. Okay. So let's talk about some of the differences now. We talked this morning about the similarities between overeaters and alcoholics, why a 12-step program is the same for them. So then I encountered all these people yelling a lot if anyone was deviating from the AA program. What I mentioned this morning for you new people is that when OA had its 21st birthday, at that time I said, we are now adults. Let's see what we learned from our daddy, AA, and then as adults, we take our daddy's wisdom and our own experience and create our own lives, our own recovery. And people said, shut up, AA, big book, black and white, only the print, blah, blah, blah. So, okay, but that's not what I'm preaching here today. I'm talking about a flexible plan for your living to stay here. I've seen a lot of those other people leave and never be heard from again. They had really great ideas, and then they left. So what I'm suggesting is, yes, AA is fabulous. Love it. Love the program. But there's some differences we need to attend to as overeaters. And if we don't, we're in big trouble, I think. And yes, Margie?
So 39 years, and I could just never stay.
Sorry?
39 years in and out of here, and I could never stay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, it's very hard. There's nothing so bad as a head full of program and a belly full of food. So I would imagine it's very hard to be in the rooms when you're having a bad time, you know? By the way, let me just go back to what the young man said over here. I think all of those things you mentioned are in my repertoire. Am I a binger? Am I a grazer? Am I a taster? Am I a sipper? Yes. You know, it just whatever you haven't tried yet. You know, I spent years sitting at meetings just judging everybody about what they're saying, what they're doing. I would go home and call my sponsor. This one said this and that one said that. She'd say, well, dear, maybe you could write about it. I just knew she was trying to shut me up. So I would write about what you said and what you said, and you were too judgmental. And, you know, you were a phony, and you were angry, and, oh, man, I just saw everybody. And then she said, well, come over and read it to me. And so I go over to her house, and I read it to her. She said, oh, circle that word, judgmental, okay. Circle that word, angry, okay. And all of a sudden, she had this whole list of defects. She said, well, do you ever do that? I said, well, sometimes, but I'm very subtle. And she said, well, dear, she said, our book tells us it's the exact nature of the wrong, not the degree. So if you do it once a day and they do it 10 times a day, all you need to worry about is you doing it once a day. Damn. I said, this is not about me. It's about them. So anyway, it took a year of that, and then we finally decided I had done my first inventory. But I would judge. And so one year in L.A. here, it was a big thing about everybody was getting up and saying, I've decided to be celibate. I've decided to be celibate. I'm going to be celibate. And I would sit in the back of the room. I said, give me a break. We can't drink. We can't eat. We shouldn't smoke. We can't do anything. And now this? I said, these people are absurd. They're total loony bins. 3 months later, I get up. I think I've decided to be celibate. You see, now I didn't know at the time that I needed to hear what they were saying. It's not that they talked me into it or I wanted to copy them. It's just as my life was moving along, then I started seeing that I'm getting myself into difficulties in this issue for a while. I think I need to pull back here for a bit. And so you never know what you're going to hear. But judge it all anyway. Judge it all. Just file it. Okay? It'll be there when you need it. Okay. So, anyway, I'm not saying anything wrong with the big book thumpers and the people who are totally into follow AA hook, line, and sinker. It works for a lot of people. I'm just wanting to offer a place for you if that isn't working for you and you want to get more flexible on things, okay? So, of course, it seems very obvious, but the biggest difference is what we started a bit into this morning is what our young man over here talks about. We, like none of the other addictions, none of them have to do what we here in the graduate school of recovery have to do. We have to create a new relationship with our substance. When I tell you, yes, it involves training, it involves being a weirdo and a freak for a while, yes. We have to develop a new relationship. So that's why when you talk about in the early stages, I got to be strict, yes, you have to know what your body feels like without any of this crap in it. So that if you do take back one here or there, you'll at least be able to know the difference. You won't be in that automatic self-medication that we talked about this morning. Okay? So the new relationship is some of what you experienced at lunch, just maybe waiting a minute before you grab the shovel, you know, not drowning it with food, not spitting at people when you eat. All of these things are part of your training. And what I'm trying to encourage you to, you've heard it from me already a few times today, is because I want you to enjoy eating. So right now we're talking about a very big difference between OA and AA, at least in my opinion. If you want to stay here and not keep running out for 39 years, I want you to find a way to enjoy a new relationship with your substance. It's sort of like getting divorced and then having to talk to your ex. Right? You're going to, you know, you have reasons. You have to stay connected, but you want to do it on a different plane. You don't want to be reactive, a giant keyboard where they push every single button, right? But you also can't run away. You've got kids together or whatever else, and so you have to form a new relationship. And that's what we better do with food or we're going to leave. That's my experience. Okay? So, in forming that new relationship, I want to propose something else. I spoke this morning a bit about this being an illness of self-hate. If you don't deal with that aspect, you will transfer addictions. Right? Because you'll just find something else to keep slapping yourself with.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry. Ultimately, you find there's nothing you can eat, drink, buy, or kiss that makes any difference. You must come home to self. You must listen to that still small voice within. You must grow up into your recovery. Otherwise, the self-hate keeps going. You just find other means. I loved Wild and Crazy Guys. Oh, my God. Yeah. So, now back up from what I just said. Here we're going to talk about that relationship. Isn't a very common theme in our culture comfort foods? Comfort foods? Okay. Now, here again is where we separate us from normies out there. We don't eat for comfort. We eat to punish ourselves. To slap ourselves. No, survival eating is to sit down and eat a moderate meal consciously with your fellows. Before recovery, we don't eat that way. That would be nice. But we eat to slap ourselves, to shutter up. We can't stand that inner voice I'm talking about, who's calling. Hello? She's pulling on our coat. Come over here. You don't belong there. You don't belong sleeping with that guy. What? I like it. No, you don't. It's not you. Very hard to come to terms with who we really are. It takes a lifetime. But so right now, I just want you to realize that when you're eating obsessively and compulsively, it's not for comfort. Okay? It's for punishment. And that's why our work with our sponsors is so important, because, well, what the hell do I feel bad about?
That's heavy.
What?
I said, oh, that's heavy.
It's all heavy. You just woke up? No, I'm playing with you, but yeah. So, listen, if it weren't hidden and if it weren't so deep, we wouldn't need each other. I would have handled it yesterday. But I need to hear you talking about celibacy and hating you for mentioning it. And then I need to start staying open, watching my own behavior, watching my food. Ah! Me too! I got the same problem I hated that bitch for talking about. See? 4 months later. Timing. So, yeah. So, yes, please, wait. I just want to see what this was. Oh, I know what I meant. Okay, yes, ma'am.
So just a question. You don't think the alcoholic drinks to punish themselves? You feel like that's a difference between us? Is that...
No, I didn't mean that was a difference.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for asking.
I misunderstood.
That. No, they do that too. Absolutely. But they don't have to drink again. They don't have to ever have a new relationship with alcohol.
Are you saying the alcohol's not comforting them?
No, it is comforting.
It is, right?
But the intention to pick up when you're totally sober and you're not having withdrawals, but you just decide to do it again, it's because this life out here is too difficult, and I don't deserve it. Very, very important issue in recovery. I just wrote some stuff about this last week because Okay, so I have not had continuous perfection with food the way I think would be best. Let's say that. Okay? I have not always liked what I did with food over the last 41 years. The times when I did not like how I was eating, not just what, because the what's not the issue, it's the how. It's this. It's that punishing, slamming whole deal. Even if it's celery. Celery, one stalk is 2 calories, takes 4 calories to eat it. If you're just here for weight loss, stand over a sink inhaling celery. But that's compulsive eating. See? So when I have not liked the how, I have learned so much. So when people get angry at people for having a relapse, whatever that is, we'll get to that in a minute, but it's a learning experience. I am in this program for my whole life. I'm sorry, but for my whole life. I'm more sorry than you are. So, no, really, it's been a great trip, but it's difficult work. It ain't easy. It's not for sissies. Spiritual life is not for sissies. So I have learned so much by observing the whole progression of how that all went down that I ended up not liking Judy, not thinking she deserved to be on Oprah 3 times, that all these people were respecting and admiring her, that nice guys liked her, that she was wearing size 8 clothes. Killer. Killer. So you think it's what your mother did and what your father did? Yeah, yeah. But now you're in charge. And it's what you're doing to yourself. We call it the parental introject in therapy, but who cares? I got to take responsibility for what I'm doing to myself. And the big issue, I always thought all those skinny bitches who got all the guys with the diamond rings and the mink coats and the 2.5 children, you know, they all felt so deserving. They were little Japs, you know. Not me. True, not me. I never felt I deserved any of that. I resented them for deserving it. They felt deserving, and they got it. I never felt deserving, and I never got it. Hello? Anyone want to give me a ring? I'll take it. Anyway, this is all very deep, heavy stuff. Does anyone want to speak in any way? Do you want to comment or share how this is impacting you? Because this is real crux of the program stuff here. And I'm not saying it to depress you. I'm saying it to invite you and encourage you. Come on. We want it on the tape, so go ahead.
This is my first OA meeting.
Oh my gosh. Oh, you gotta
Sorry. And I was confused because this is a workshop versus like the meeting, but I'll go to a real meeting, I guess, later. But I was thinking about what you were saying, and what about sugar? Like, you know, how the alcoholic needs the drink, and then the sugar is an addictive source, if you will.
Right.
That might be my similarity, that whole issue.
Thank you. Well, for the others of you who are new, I started the day by first asking in the room, who are the newcomers who have been around a while? It is a different program for brand new people versus, I'm trying to encourage you about something to look forward to. But believe me, my first 2 years, as I said before, and I gave a lecture this morning on it so you can get the tape, but yes, sugar is a problem. Yes, we do much better without it. Yes, it is a good idea to be rigid and disciplined for at least 2 years. Remember my joke about encouraging people at least 2 years? So, you know, oh, God, it's your first day. I'm sorry. But, you know, just kind of pass over most of what I'm saying and then, no, really. And then, you know, I did not start thinking this way till I had been in the program 20 years. So 20 years from now, maybe you'll remember some of this, and or buy the tape, whatever. So, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, there was someone here. Oh, sure.
When did you start feeling like you deserved?
When did I start feeling like I deserved? Well, I'm still dealing with that issue. I guess maybe, you know, from time to time in different ways, I still deal with it on some level. Accepting life's compromises, looking at my demandingness. I think being abstinent helped a lot, because I would believe that if this is coming to me, it must be intended by the universe. It must be all the energies in sync, you know? Like when I did those TV shows, I just prayed before, let me channel thy peace. Blah, 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 blah. I was so nervous and everything. And then whatever happened, happened. And I said, well, I must have been meant to be there, you know? It takes a while. You fall back into I don't deserve. I think I pretty much now feel I deserve whatever comes to me, really. Some of it is karma from the past. But I accept responsibility for that, you know?
Yes. I'm Steve. One of the definitions I've heard of relapse is a return to self-destructive behavior after a period of progress. And for the alcoholic, it's clear, you know, drinking is a relapse. And in OA, I've struggled with the difference between a defined abstinence and a food plan, and what actually constitutes a relapse, and how to, I mean, that's what brought me to this workshop, is how to, you know, build a plan and have a target I'm going for, so that I know whether I'm progressing and succeeding, whether I'm BSing myself. Like, is it, you know, having a food plan, having a definition of what abstinence is, and where the twain meet or separate.
Yeah, I think I've got that coming up. That's why I started looking at my notes. We'll discuss that in a minute.
One of the things I wanted to say is, what is out there that makes me feel as good as sitting down to a wonderful meal that may have some sweetness in it, which would make it even more wonderful? What can compete with that? Well, you know, it's very hard to find what competes with that, that can give me that high. Well, maybe it's God, maybe it's sex, maybe it's, you know, who knows? I'm still working on that. But when you talked about a song, the first thing I wrote down was songs my mother loved, because I was so much my mother's son. And then I said, wait a minute, that's easy, I know that. What are the songs that I love? And as I started writing down, and it took a while, but as I started writing down these songs and thinking about them, that felt sweeter than sweet. That felt good to me. So there's a clue.
Yeah. Thank you. Let me just expand on that a minute. I was attending a workshop a few months ago, and they said, quickly, say the first thing that comes into your mind, what brings you joy? And I said, silence. And it shocked the hell out of me, because I wrote a whole book about my experiences in a Buddhist monastery on silence and how much I hated it. And there is a sweet serenity in silence. Now, when I first came to the program, it was sex, like you said. That was the only comparable thing. When I first started in here, I used to jerk off 5 times a day. So, I didn't eat. I didn't eat. You know, whatever it is. I mean, it's just a normal body function. Reach for yourself instead of the shelf, you know? Reach for your mate instead of a plate. So, but now, I never knew I was a writer, and still I started writing, and now I'm an accomplished writer. Oh, I want to say a little bit just about that real quick. But now, when I get into that zone with the writing, that is sweeter than anything in the whole world. Because I'm not involved. I'm just channeling something else. and it's very nice, very nice. You know, there's a group called Arts Anonymous where people talk about if you do not express your creative energy, you will implode back into your addiction. And I'm exploring that a lot in my life, that I need to stay creating. That's a big part of my life. And there's different ways to create. I love cooking. That's creative, you know. It doesn't have to be, you know, hotshot stuff necessarily. Oh, man. See, it's after lunch. What was I just going to say? I forgot what it was. Well, I'm in two writer critique groups, and, you know, you write something that you just think is so good. And thank God I have an openness to feedback today in my life. I go there and they say, what? I don't understand this. What? Well, look how that's not good structure. You know? And I first want to kill them. And then I think, isn't it fabulous that, one, they will take the time to read this and give me feedback, and, two, that I'll be open to listening. I don't have to take all their suggestions, but... whoa, you know? And I feel high when I leave there. Even if I've gotten reamed, you know, I feel great because of that issue of being open and receptive. That can substitute for food, I think. Yes, Nikki.
I was thinking that you can get confused in the beginning between deserving and being conceited and arrogant. And I think that the deserving has a piece of humility. And if you bring the humility with it, then there is no conflict.
Yes, thank you. Well, that's why what I was saying is that how much I initially blamed OA. See, I said, well, if this is happening, OA wanted it to happen. I couldn't say that I deserved it. It was something that you guys had created. I could not own my wanting. Because then, you know, all kinds of issues come up, you know. You can't sustain it. You're going to lose it. You have to lean into the longing for its returning, and it's gone. A lot of stuff like that. So we can't get too far afield with so much.
Hi, I'm Elisa from Alaska. And one of the tendencies just with my addictive personality is when I come to something like this, because I live somewhere where there's a very small OA community, is to kind of binge on the material itself or the lectures. And I've been very excited this weekend just to listen to myself and what I want to do or what I need to do. And one thing I did at lunch was just to sit in the sunshine because I was hungry for that and feel that visceral need being fulfilled while I was eating.
Great. Yeah, so there's all kinds of things we deserve. A quiet moment. Hello. I remember I would call my sponsor with my crisis. I'm a major drama queen. And I'd. She'd say, dear, I'm having my lunch now. Could you call me back in 20 minutes? Did she know what it took to make the call? And then I got to call back. Ego. I called back. That's it. Okay, so another thing, even though in AA a lot of people work the program differently, some people are on doctor-prescribed drugs, some people think whatever, in our program it's even more so because, as was mentioned earlier, what the hell is abstinence? Right? Everybody's got their own abstinence. Well, I think in the Brown book, they came up with a nice, OA's Brown book, a nice definition, something like eating sanely and moving toward a normal body weight. There you go. So let's stop the debating society. You know, I've been around a long time, okay? I used to go to Roseanne's house. I've been around this program. And I was there when this whole schism started in OA between Bill B. and Fred S. And Bill B. went all over the country talking about the steps will set you free. You just read the big book, do the steps, and God will take care of your food. And Fred S. said, no way, you got to focus on your tight-ass food plan, and you cannot talk until You're perfect with it 7 months from now or something like that, you know? And they went all over and created this big a program full of women, got two guys to get them fighting with each other. So now we have the How group, CEA, OA this, OA that, plus this, plus that. It's all OA, I'm sorry. It's all OA. I don't make any demarcations. So we've got to be careful about fighting over abstinence. This is something between you and your food sponsor, not between you and God. Not between you and God. Not between you and God. God doesn't care what you're eating. Just get busy on the spiritual work. I believe your eating has to be witnessed by another OA person. Not every day, not every meal, whatever you work out is fine. 1 year I went to Bali for a month, and I took 30 postcards. We didn't have internet then. And every day I wrote down what I ate and mailed it back to California. Because at that time in my recovery, I needed to do it that way, right? You do what you got to do. You got to know, where are you? Am I on a slippery slope? Am I in dangerous waters? Am I full of it? Am I getting ready? And like someone said this morning, the relapse happens long before the first bite. It's the stinking thinking that takes us out. So, let me see here. So again, I want to say, if you are making promises about how you're going to eat, how does that jive with surrender? If you're making promises about how you're going to eat, how does that jive with surrender? Anyone have an answer for me on that? I think it's a very important thing for us to chew on. If you are making a commitment about how you're going to eat, how does that jive with surrender? This is big because a lot of people in the program work this way. I promise you that I'm going to eat this way. The most I promise is, if I'm ever going to promise you that I intend to go this way, I'll let you know tomorrow how it worked out. Right? I will not guarantee to you anything about my relationship with food. In an instant, I can go back to compulsive eating. My top weight is still out there waiting for me. It is. Yes. Did you want to say something? Shall I come over?
No.
Okay. So does anyone have... Do you want to discuss that issue? Nobody.
I want you to discuss it.
Oh, yeah, sure. I said this morning, I want this to be a think tank where we all bring our experience. Believe me, I don't really have that answer. I have judgments, you know, and all that stuff. But I think this program is about compassion and humility. You know, when I went to my first Weight Watcher meeting, which was in the 60s, the leader said, "Welcome, pilgrim, your search has ended." And I'll never forget that. My search didn't end, but... but if you email me, I'll email you back something that I just quoted. I got out of a good spiritual book about being on a pilgrimage and a journey, and you must be challenged and learn something. Here's what it said, something like, if you just change without being challenged, then you're a chameleon. And a lot of people in OA do that. They just follow orders, and they become just like their sponsor. And nothing wrong with that for the beginning, because you have to model after somebody, right? But at some point, again, we're going to go into that voice and listen to what really works for me. How am I similar to my sponsor? How am I different? So, well, what I was just thinking about is I remember going to my therapist and complaining that my sponsor, who was married, I was sleeping around with all these wild and crazy guys and still not getting enough. And my sponsor, who had been married for 30 years to the same guy, was getting laid every morning. So I went to my therapist. I said, this is a crock, you know. Single people are supposed to be getting more sex than married people. That's the deal. So he said, well, when it becomes like brushing your teeth, there's something wrong. Every morning, let's get a little. Not to say anything about her or her activities or anything else, but just that you've got to start differentiating from your sponsor as well. And instead create a sisterhood of all the people you're going to take stuff from. My sponsor always said, don't put all your eggs in one basket, honey. And she would even declare moratoriums. She had a lot of followers. And then she'd all of a sudden say, sorry, gals, I need a vacation. Find someone. And she wouldn't take phone calls for maybe a month. She took care of herself. She modeled that for me. So when people called me in the middle of my lunch, I could say, sorry, dear, but I have to finish my lunch. Now I just goes to voicemail. So anyway, so let me see. So, you, what is relapse? What is relapse? Remember this morning I used that phrase sliver, slice, slab, slob? You know? What is relapse? Actually, I'm so glad you mentioned that, Margie. Weight gain or loss should never, ever, ever be a criteria in this program. Yes, and we're all into it. We're, you know, I mean, there are workshops. You'll hear people talk about how much OA people are sizing each other up. She gained weight. She lost weight. People might be doing fabulously and not losing weight. Wait till menopause, honey, and then you say that. Right? Right? Amen, sister. Yeah. You can be doing all the things you used to do, and your hormones will not cooperate. So it's not about the tonnage. You've got to start trusting your instinct about who feels like recovery. If you're sitting at lunch and this person is spitting while they're talking and advertising to you how smart they are, wonder, are they going to have time to listen to you? Are they going to listen for that song? Huh? Do you want someone to hear your song? Do you want someone to see you? Or do you want to be a chameleon? So the other part of that thing was that if you grow through being challenged, you become a pilgrim or something like that. It's much better done than what I said. So email me and I'll send it to you, okay? So does anyone have any idea what you think relapse is? Is it, and this man talked about binging versus grazing versus tasting versus, and he left. Anyway, he had good stuff to say.
I think it's when you are no longer focused on the steps.
Okay, so for a relapse could be when you're no longer focused on the steps. Maybe when you're no longer believing that this takes that kind of work. When you start believing in something else, some other deity, perhaps.
Like basically believing, because I think after a time, in my experience, I felt like it was lifted and I thought it was no longer there. And I start with a little this and a little that, and then it becomes a relapse. When I no longer, I'm admitting that I'm powerless over the food.
Yes. Okay, that sounds really good. But as, you know, as we talked about, you can stop mid-bag. You can notice that that's happening, saying, whoa, it's back. They're back, you know. I feel grateful that 41 years ago I surrendered to the fact, for whatever reason, probably all my work first in addictions of other kinds, I surrendered to the fact that I have a lifelong chronic illness with a tendency toward relapse. That even, you know, the thing I showed you this morning, even when we're totally off the sauce, the obsessional thinking and the gambling of getting away with something and all the rest comes back. So if you accept that, then relapse is a part of recovery. And as I told you, I learned a hell of a lot in my times of not being happy with how I ate. Yes?
When you say F it.
When I say what?
F it.
F it. Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. Yeah, and isn't that what we were talking about this morning? When you say F it, when, oh, well, again, she put that sugar in my salad dressing, so I'm going to binge for 6 months. Right? Not my fault. Not my fault. I tried. Someone tricked me. Honey, they're all out there to trick you. They all want us fat. Who cares? Let them do what they're going to do. Okay? There's always a good reason to beat yourself up. So maybe relapse is falling back into self-hate, as was suggested. To decide, F it, which means F me. Right? It means F that new person I'm becoming, the person I'm birthing. I don't want to anymore. And guess what, honey? Sometimes it just gets really tiring. Okay? Around the 39th year, it gets really old and retiring, and you've already said everything I thought I needed to hear, and I'm still showing up. Yes?
Maybe relapse. I think it's a continuum, maybe, but I think maybe ultimately it's when you leave OA, when you're no longer in the rooms. I had a couple of major relapses in OA, and I stayed, even though it was very difficult to stay, and I do count that as recovery time. I don't count it as abstinent time, but I was learning as long as I was in the room.
Yes, and for my book, you were also accepting what we talked about a lot this morning, that you have a lifelong chronic illness, that you need a treatment program, that this is the walking outpatient program, and I need to keep getting my treatment. No matter how the illness is flaring up. So forgetting that I need treatment, remember I said what denial was denying that I need other people to help me. Yeah.
I think relapse might be for some people, I know for me, when my head gets so loud and filled with those disease thoughts and I start believing them and I start acting upon them. And like whether that be just keep like constantly putting food in my mouth and overeating to a point of physical pain, or like if you're bulimic, throwing up or whatever your abstinence might be.
Yeah, it's believing your own BS. Isn't that what she's saying? Yeah. And again, an addict alone is in bad company. Left to our own devices, we make decisions harmful to self. That's why, I'm sorry, the whole treatment is you got to keep coming back. So that you stop hearing your own voice and you hear some other voice. Now, but then this contradicts what I'm talking about, listening to the still small voice within, right? And this is how it's different for newcomers than old timers. When you're new and someone says, honey, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, you think it's a train. You expect, when you're around a while, you've learned some of these discipline things we're talking about, you've grown through the steps, you've surrendered spiritually many, 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 many times. At some point, maybe you can trust your own judgment. Maybe you can trust that if your hairs are standing up on your arm, they are out to get you. Like I did with the guy in India when the birds went, whoo! I trusted my body to signal. Right? I don't know what day that is, and it comes and goes, but I'm just trying to encourage a bit of self-confidence. If you're around here long enough, something must have happened. You do get changed. It happens to us by osmosis. We sit in the rooms and we absorb the energy of each other. That's why I'm so crazed about cell phones in meetings, because when you're down here, you're not signaling with each other. We're not vibrating out of here, you know? But OA meetings are like a vibration when we're paying attention. Yes?
I think relapse is my wanting to be normal and forgetting who I am.
That's
and
good.
It's like sliver, slice, lab, swab. It's like it's the little things that
to go before the big, like, I'm out there. It's like, I don't want to make phone calls. I don't want to go to, you know, I don't need that meeting.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like letting those little things slip away, and then I'm back into the mood.
Right. Okay, so a lot of people think or say that if you accept that you're an overeater, then you have to have this controlled, rigid food plan. And what I'm saying is, to stay in acceptance that I do have a lifelong chronic problem, and I can stop living in fear because you've given me enough support that I'm going to be okay. And even when I get a little far afield, something says, hey, whoa. But when you go to what you said is relapse, which is thinking I'm not one of them, thinking I am a normal person, then where do I go? What do I do? What access is there? What is there for us if we don't want to believe this? I'm sorry, pure and simple. What's your next alternative? This is lifelong, free of charge, often fun, and you get to grow out of it. And what else? What, you have another better idea for me? There's no better idea, in my opinion. Who wanted to speak here?
Well, I think one of the traditional notions, at least Harlan always pushes it, is the craving in the body and the obsession in the mind. And they work together to kind of stifle out everything else so that the craving and the obsession, just give me the right food and everything is going to be fine and nothing else matters till I get the right food.
Yeah. Well, that's that belief that once worked for us, like I talked about this morning, it once worked for us. It was our solution to our problems. And it's hard as hell to believe that that relationship has changed and my best friend has turned on me and it's not going to be good again. It's over. Ah! No good. No good. Okay, so let me see what I wrote here. So, quote from the AA Big Book. Again, I dealt with this, but we'll just go a little more. The idea that somehow, someday, he will enjoy and control his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. Just want to say it one more time. I believe a successful recovery in OA is a person who can both control and enjoy their eating. Crucial difference in the two programs. Major. If you're eating it with all that guilt and self-loathing and punishing feeling, you're not enjoying it. I want you to savor it, suck it dry, and move on. So another big problem, how our programs are different, is like I said earlier, the AA people have not tried as many ways as we have, and they're not, you know, to control it, and they're not coming from a society that tells them how easy it's going to be. So they get some respect for the difficulty. And I've said this many times, but what I heard at my first meeting, and nobody said it out loud, but a bunch of Palos Verdes housewives were huddled together in a library on a Monday morning at 10, and the fact that they took that time to huddle together said, we know how hard it is. So if you're going to meetings where everybody's saying, ha, I'm hot, you're not, I got it, it was easy, God did it, run. I want to be with people who acknowledge my struggle and how hard it is. I didn't want to gain all that weight. I'm trying my best. It walked me right through the door to Overeaters Anonymous. Dregs of society. So that's very important, I think, to keep recognizing that and having some comfort and compassion around that. It's very hard. and I think, you know, because of this failing to plan, failing to plan is planning to fail, on many levels we have to take our recovery a lot more seriously than the AAs do. you know, they plug the jug and go to meetings. And they can spend years in fellowship, smoking, drinking coffee, making jokes, la, 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 la. Having birthday cakes, right? Have you ever been to an OA birthday celebration? Here's your cantaloupe. All right. But, you know, it's fun, but it's often not that much fun. You know, we have to take it seriously. We have to plan ahead. I plan ahead. I've got little crap up in my room. I found out there was no refrigerator and no microwave. I'm schlepping my stuff down to the lobby where I have to microwave my soup. I don't care. I want to have that soup. I liked it. I made it. It doesn't matter that they're serving good stuff out here. I want what I want. So, what's the big deal? That's not going to any lengths because I'm a saint. That's me giving myself what I would like so I feel satisfied and compact, like on the beam. Okay? Not at the mercy of what you're going to throw at me. Some kind of over-processed whatever. Not always, but why should I even have to have that danger in my life? And I don't always plan. I'm going a week out of the country next week. I'm not, you know, taking a few little snacks, but, you know, I'll be eating differently than I eat when I'm home. I hope I won't gain weight. I probably will. And when I'm home, it's normal and customary again. Traveling a little too much, by the way. So, I think. Not really. I'm happy to do it, but it is dangerous territory. It's dangerous. It's difficult for me. You know? I'm not signing up for cruises. I'm not interested. Okay. So we have to keep a tighter rein. We often have to call our sponsor every day. AA people get away with, I'll talk to you, you know? But so there's a lot more discipline and rigidity required. This is graduate school. Ah, this one I hate. I hate this. Now, I know I've heard this from smokers, that they say even if they gave up smoking for 20 years, they still have a longing every once in a while to pick up a cigarette. Well, I think we have to learn to live with perpetual longing. Again, I'm either depressing you or inspiring you to become a more spiritual being. What's so terrible? To have a little rawness, to have a little ache. Huh? You can walk with your ache. And as you get older, you'll have more. But it's not so terrible, but it's just, I want to say it out loud so we can be conscious of that and not just listen to people who say, God zapped me thin. God did it all for me. For them, it's great. I'm sorry. That's good. I don't want to, you know, don't want to make trouble. But if God's not doing it for you, I want you to be a little comforting to yourself that, yes, I do long to have that. And I do hate her. And, you know, look what they're getting to eat and not me. Why not? It's what's going on. Say it out loud and be proud. Okay? Who wants to say some more about that? Okay, let's take a 10 to 15 minute break and come back, and we'll do some more I have in mind, okay?